Confessionals, thank you for tuning in. I know it's been a minute. I'm sorry. It has been one of those months where time got away from me and I did not get a chance to record anything for the podcast. I am also highly attuned to wanting to really share things of value to you and make sure that I'm not just rattling on about personal experiences or general ideas about how to survive as a creative. I really want to give you things that you can take away really and apply to your own creative life, hopefully. Now, I did actually record this earlier and somehow it did not save. So such is my dedication, I'm going to record this again, and maybe it's just a sign that I need to be more succinct, because I'm going to be talking about two things today. One of them is pitching and the other is being at a creative crossroads. So that's the next thing that I would just point out. The podcast, I'm going to try to make it half practical, half reflective going forward. So there are going to be some writing hacks, things like that, but also just some more general advice or me sharing experiences so that you can sort of understand the universality of being a creative, I suppose, it might be helpful to you anyway. So the first thing I want to talk about is pitching. I am highly experienced journalist. I've written across many kinds of media. You know, I have done print, online, radio, done tiny bit of television, but not really as a journalist, more as a speaker. And I have also been an editor, so I have received pitches. And also with my books and screenwriting projects, I have done a lot of pitching. So I really want to give you some tips and give you a walkthrough of one of the big proposals I wrote that got me over the line and got me offers from different publishers. So let's get on with it. The first thing I would say when you're pitching is think about who you're pitching to. It really does matter. So don't send out blanket email pitches where you haven't even checked who the editor is or if this is the right place to send it to. Sometimes I've seen, and I've done it myself, accidentally writing a pitch to the wrong magazine, where, you know, you might mention a magazine twice in a pitch and you only change it once at the top and forget that it's at the bottom. Yeah, that doesn't look good. It's not a great look. Be targeted. Spend some time drawing up your top five or your top 10 wish lists, publications, whether it's print, online, if you want to write it for radio, whatever it is that you want to do, think about how is the best way for this story to be told. And this is my wish list of how I would like it to be brought out into the world. And then I would just target from 1 to 10, you know, who you absolutely would love to see, like see publish it. And if it doesn't work out, number two, number three. So think about as well, some publishers or publications don't want to be pitched to when you have pitched to other people. They will want to know, well, I've actually pitched this to 3 magazines or 4 magazines. So, you know, some of them don't respond well to that. So it really just depends on what kind of a piece it is. Is it time sensitive? If it's time sensitive, then you probably need to explain that really quickly, as I did with my proposal, which I will give you the example of shortly. The other thing is that's very important in a pitch is to say, why you? Why are you writing this? Why are you telling this story? Why are you the right person to be published on this or to be recorded saying this or whatever it is that you're doing? It's so important to be really, really clear about those sorts of things. Going on, I'm going to walk you through a proposal that I wrote for Beyond Veiled Clichés, The Real Lives of Arab Women. Now, this pitch is an unusual beast. I only had to do 2 drafts of it, and that is probably highly unusual for a book proposal that is 10 plus pages. But I just, it was one of those things that flowed, and I leaned into it and I didn't question it. The next book I wrote, Fridays with My Folks, there were multiple drafts of that pitch. And as that was also the case for my next nonfiction book, which is out next year. In my past life, I was Cleopatra, had a different name. You know, that's a whole thing. So I'm just going to walk you through my proposal for Beyond Veiled Clichés so you can sort of get a sense of what I think is the most important thing. The first thing to do is to give an introductory statement about what your book is. Now, this when I say introductory, it can be, if you wanted to just do 2 paragraphs, you could. I didn't. I actually wrote, let's see, 1.5 pages. And it was essentially me working towards my conclusion, which is I need to write this book and this is why. So my very first line in this proposal was, books on the Arab world particularly those focused on the place of women in it, are plentiful, but they are all written by Western women. Now, that's very important because what I am basically saying is I want to write the same kind of thing, but from an actual Arab woman's perspective. So what really I think is the best thing to do with your first paragraph is write it last in a weird way. It might not, maybe not, maybe you will write that first perfect paragraph, you know, the first draft, whatever, but in a weird way, like you have to have a really strong sense of what you're actually trying to say. And your first paragraph is almost really a conclusion. You're leading the reader in, but you are really saying this is what this is about. And that way they know straight off the bat, this is what I'm going to be reading about. And this is where this writer is coming from. And yes, I'm interested or I'm not interested. Now, I do work through it. I basically say I think there's value in stories like this, but here are the problems. This is what those perspectives are missing. This is what is never really detailed. And isn't it time for this kind of perspective now? Now, I also made sure that I added that personal stake in there, that I said I'm of Arab heritage. I grew up in the West. These stories hurt us. These stories matter. The fact that our voices are absent from these discussions, they make a difference to how people perceive us and how they treat us and how we see ourselves. And we have every right to express ourselves from our own perspectives through our own voices. So I was not tonally coming across as a victim in any way. It was very much actually from a place of empowerment. It's that I am an avid reader and I've read all these books and yes, there could be some value in it, but why are we so interested in what Western women think of us when we can tell you ourselves what we think of us and what we have to share? If you're interested in us, why don't you listen to how we see ourselves? So I was really trying to come from a sort of almost professional perspective, but I added in the personal stakes there, which is that this is something that has hurt me. This is something that matters to me. And then I do say that Arab Australian women are this meeting point. We are the intersection between Western ideals and Arab tradition. And this can get messy, but there's also great beauty in these layers. And we shouldn't have to be some perfect combination of East and West. Then I say a more general statement that I believe that one of the most effective ways of creating better understanding of other lives and cultures is through storytelling. That is the bottom line for me. I am a storyteller. I believe that stories don't just disarm us, they affect us. That is what story is about. People being affected and us being affected by what we're watching or listening to or reading. So important to understand that. We can sneak up on people in this way because we are so universally connected in terms of our emotional spheres and fields and whatever you want to say. So really my goal is always to normalize people, not to convince people that I'm just like you. It's not about being just like anyone else. It's about saying that I have every right to be on this earth existing in my own bubble, the way you exist in your own bubble, if that's what you would like to do. So it was very important for me to do that. Now, I also established the political climate, which was that there is a lot of racial tension, and that there's rising global fear around terrorism, and there's some fresh fear of quote unquote the other. So it was very important for me to normalize those experiences through this book. So what I've tried to do in that first page and a half is say, this is what we have, this is what we need, and this is why. This is what we have, this is what we need, and this is why. It's really important to get that across. Now, I was applying for funding from the Council for Australian Arab Relations at the time. Now, I might do another episode on funding from government bodies and things like that and how to apply. I've had mixed luck with that. I did actually get funding from CAR, Council for Australian Arab Relations. So it was important for me to be upfront in my pitch that this is time sensitive. I need to hear back quickly because I'm applying and my chances of getting funding increase exponentially, or well, they completely change if I have a publisher attached to this. So the other thing that I did was kind of pitch to them the way I was going to pitch to CAR, which is that there's going to be media for this. There's a lot of potential for this. I also got support from different people across different industries, but that's really more about funding. So I will talk about that another day. The next thing I did was I wrote an about me paragraph or two, basically establishing my credentials that I am a journalist, I am a writer, I've written books, but this is my first nonfiction book, but whatever. You really have to convince people that they're not just banking on you having a great idea, that you have the ability to bring this across the line. It's very, very important that your About Me section, your bio, speaks to the reader in a way that says, I don't just want to read this, I want to read it by this person. And you have to have enough self-belief in that moment to say, hey, I can do this, I've got my back. So no time for the cutting down of yourself in these moments. Get over that for the pitch document. You don't want that coming through in your pitch. One thing I will say as well is that my original title was something a bit rubbish, and my agent very quietly said, you need a new title. And it did come to me in the shower, Beyond Veiled Clichés. And I really felt like it was important for me to say something like that, because it tied in very cleverly, I thought, with what I was saying, which is that even the books that try to dispel the myths around Arab women buy into them and completely focus on the veil. And women who go into the Middle East kind of just put the veil on for a day or two and suddenly feel enlightened, or they understand the lives of Arab women, which is just, that's not how it works. So your title needs to be catchy, but also it has to have some value. Now, I can't tell you how many times people have said the name of my book wrong, but the Veiled Clichés is always there, but it's always Behind Veiled Clichés or something like that. But it's fine. It doesn't really bother me that much, because at the end of the day, if people are talking about your work and being affected by it, that matters more than getting the exact title right. Hopefully they get your name right and they can look you up. So that's more important. Now, the next section for me in this proposal was proposed chapter headings. Now, I really want to emphasize that you do not have to write something that will stay completely intact in terms of what I wrote on this pitch is exactly what I have to write in the book. It doesn't work like that at all from my experience anyway. I was very lucky to have a publisher and an editor who really were very open and understanding, and they really left it to me to decide how I would tell the story. But, you know, we had to agree on certain things being in that story or of value, I suppose, because otherwise, you know, you don't want to turn around and write a completely different book to what you've proposed. So it was very issues based for me, and I really needed to be clear that this is what I think this book is going to cover. And even though it didn't completely cover everything in the end, it still sort of was close enough. Now, I'll quickly run through those chapter headings. My parents' daughter, race and society, freedom and feminism, culture, pop culture and sport, war, sex and relationships, sexuality, politics, freedom and democracy, activism, religion, motherhood, society, social life and friendships, the truth about Arab women. Now, you can see straight away that I'm just covering issues there in a very general way. I wrote paragraphs, by the way. You don't just write chapter headings. You really have to add some meat to those bones. You can't just write some paragraphs and say, hey, I'm gonna do something and it's got this catchy title. They weren't even proper titles. That was just issues based. This is what I think I want to cover, and this is how it's going to go. This is the order. Now, that didn't stay. I've actually got the book here. I'm going to run through. This is what I ended up with in terms of the chapter outline. Prologue, A Dance in the Desert. Inner Pain and Outer Turmoil. The Trauma of Identity. Religion and Culture, The Veiled Clichés, One Day Love and Sex, Shame, Queer Voices, The Sisterhood, The Fighters, The Truth About Arab Women. So, as you may have picked up, only one title remained intact, and that was the Truth About Arab Women. Most of what I covered in this pitch document ended up in this book, but not all of it. I think I approached it in that very naive sort of way when I first wrote the pitch of like, I'm going to dispel myths. And then when I did all the interviews, I really wanted to take a much more sort of sophisticated approach and really just let the women speak for themselves and show, not tell. And so I think that's probably why there wasn't such an emphasis on certain things like sport and all this sort of thing. You know, you don't need to do it sort of a chapter dedicated to war. It was sprinkled throughout because so many people have been traumatized by war and occupation in the Arab world. It's just, and in Australia as well, because their families have come from war. So it's something that, you know, you have to think about, but it's good to have an idea when you go in about what you think. Now, you may have noticed that in that first roundup of chapters, I didn't even have one that talked about the veil. And that was because I think I really, it wasn't intentional. It just didn't occur to me. I just felt like, oh my God, I've talked about this enough times. I don't want to talk about it again. But you can't have a book called Beyond Veiled Clichés and not talk about the veil. And so I obviously did end up with a chapter in there called The Veiled Clichés, and it was an important chapter for me to write, and I'm glad I did, but it was just interesting to me that I didn't include it in the first roundup. And nobody actually said anything, so I thought that was quite funny. I guess I really just wanted to talk about other stuff. And, it, you know, you can't have a book about the Arab world, it seems, without that coming up everywhere. It just came up so often that I thought, wow, even the people who aren't Muslim or religious are talking about it. So I really do need to acknowledge this in a deep way, not just in a passing way. Now, the book is also very, very, I need to emphasize, it's about Arab women. It's not strictly about Muslim women. So that's something to think about as well. But the veil affects non-Muslim women. It affects women everywhere. So it's not something that you can just sort of dismiss. The final thing I included in my pitch was a sample chapter. Now, I call it sample chapter loosely. I did not write a fresh chapter. I didn't have the capacity at the time to do that. And also, I didn't want to write something that really I knew would require interviews and research when I didn't know if it was going to even end up in the book. And I just was still finding the tone and the threads of this book. So I ended up with I was completely transparent about it, but I used an existing piece and just tweaked it a bit. So I had something published in, I think, Daily Life for Fairfax. It was in relation to an event, I think Anecdote Festival or All About Women or something at the Sydney Opera House, and they published this piece from me about growing up Arab in Australia. And I just transplanted that piece into this pitch document because I felt tonally it matched what was my writing. It was my voice. It was clear that it was going to talk about things that I was probably going to talk about in the book anyway, which I did, which was, early on, my childhood and growing up Arab and Muslim. So that was, I guess you could say it was a little cheat sheet thing to keep in mind, but I did it and it worked really well. Now, I was very lucky. This was a pitch that just flowed. It came to me. When you actually listen to the second part of this podcast, you'll hear me talk about how I was a bit of a crossroads creatively, and I ended up writing this book a year after I made some big decisions about my creative path. And this really was, I think, a long time in the making. It was meant for me and I was meant for it, and I eventually found my way to it. So it kind of just flowed. It wasn't an easy book to write by any means, and I probably will do a podcast episode on writing nonfiction memoir journalism. If I don't know if anybody's interested in that, but it's bloody hard. So I might do that. But the next two books that I wrote that were nonfiction, those pitches were a lot harder to nail down. And that was probably because I had more specific audiences. And so it was really about making sure that I was reaching their ears in a way, or their eyes rather, in a way that really it was nailing it for them and they understood what I was trying to do and it was meeting the needs that they had as well as publishers. So that's going to happen sometimes. Sometimes you're actually pitching to an audience of one. I wasn't doing that with this book, with Beyond Veiled Clichés. It was really just, this is what I want to do. And luckily it landed and I did get, I think, a few offers with that one. And I ended up going with Penguin Random House. The vintage imprint there, which was, an amazing, amazing thing to happen for me. But the next book, as I said, quite a few drafts to nail it down, which was Fridays with My Folks. It was about aging and illness, and it was like, how much of my personal life goes into this versus other people's stories? Am I just doing the same sort of thing as I did with Beyond Veiled Clichés? I don't know. And, you'll go through different situations with your books once you're actually writing them as well. But this document is really important. It is a map. It is sort of, the blueprint in a way for your work, and you will keep going back to it. And it's the same thing with the next book I have coming out. In my past life, I was Cleopatra. I always had a sense of what I was trying to achieve with that book. It was going to be an exploration of the New Age from the perspective of someone who is a believer of things, but not everything. Someone who is a skeptic in some ways and asks a lot of questions and has seen a lot of stuff that just boggles the mind. But also my inherent interest in humanity and why we need so many roads to get to one destination. And so I knew that that was at the heart of my nonfiction proposal for that book. You need to have that. You need to have a sense of, why am I writing this? That will show through in your pitch. If you don't get that right, you might be a bit wobbly and you're not going to convince anyone that if you don't really know what you're trying to write, they don't know what you're trying to write. So I hope that helped you. Beyond Failed Clichés, my proposal was 11 pages. It did include an acknowledgement that I was seeking funding at the time. So it was a time-sensitive pitch, which definitely helped in getting it over the line quicker. But that was obviously all true. It really was a time-sensitive pitch. When it's not time-sensitive, multiple drafts, making sure that I'm really getting a clear sense of I know what I'm doing here. It's very important. It doesn't matter how experienced you are. I hope that helps. Welcome to part two of this episode of Creative Confessionals. I'm going to talk about being at creative crossroads. I recently celebrated a birthday and it was, you know, a very, very lovely day and a great opportunity to take a step back and look at the year that has passed. It's been a difficult year for so many people, but as always, I'm very grateful for everything. And it really had me thinking about a lot of things because I see my birthday as a personal new year, and it's probably more significant to me than the actual new year in a weird way. I do find I tend to set some goals around that time or just really do a stock take, I suppose, of where I am. Nothing too heavy. I'm not talking vision boards. I tend to get quite reflective around identifiable spots on my timeline. So a birthday is a great time to go, oh, where was I this time last year or the year before? And for some reason this year, I really was reflecting back on 5 years ago. And 5 years ago, I was very lucky to be traveling through Europe with my husband and exploring all these amazing ancient sites and just hearing the sound of my feet crunching the earth. And I really just get quite emotional just remembering how beautiful it was and how special it was. And it wasn't anything fancy. It was just this very, I guess, soul-opening trip for me. I really did feel like I was at a crossroads. At the time, I was gradually moving away from print media and online journalism, and I don't think I was doing any trade media by that point. I was doing radio. I was producing at ABC Radio National. I was starting to do segments here and there and presenting and little things here and there, but I was also writing a novel at the time, or trying to write my next novel. Now, as you might know, I self-published twice. I was a little bit, I guess, scarred by that, or I had a bit of an imprint from feeling like I had failed as an author because I couldn't get a publisher the first time around. There were so many factors as to why I didn't, but I think it did leave an imprint, if I'm being completely honest, and I think it's important to be. And it wasn't about ego, it was just the general thing that writers go through is maybe I'm not good enough, maybe what I write is crap. But it wasn't. I know that what I have written has gotten such lovely feedback from people. But anyway, that's not the point of what I'm saying here. It's that I knew I wanted to write another novel, but I was scared. I was really frightened of writing something that was just going to be rejected again. And even though I had an agent by this point, I still felt like I needed to audition my work to the world again. And it was just this strange time. It was, what do I really want to do? Where do I want to put my creative energy? And I had a lot of ideas about things that I felt I should do. And one of the things that happened on this trip, and this is what I love about travel, it's not that I have changed as a person, because wherever you go, you take yourself with you. But there's something about the expansiveness of being in another place where you don't have your usual anchors and reminders and hooks and things like that that keep you in place. There's something about, well, it's very liberating, I suppose, in the sense of you can finally be honest and let go. And I was so reflective on this trip, and I had so many epiphanies and moments of understanding of myself. And I remember so clearly these, I suppose, visions really I had, where I understood so clearly that I was walking in the wrong direction when it came to my work. I was absolutely spending a lot of creative time and energy pursuing things that didn't necessarily want me back in the way that I thought I wanted them. And it was really important to me because I had to have the courage to hit the reset button and say, maybe this isn't going to work out. And maybe this isn't the thing that I need to do right now. What else can I do? And I wanted to share this with you because if I hadn't have had that epiphany, I don't know if I would have written Beyond Devout Clichés. And then a year later, Fridays with My Folks. And then a year later, in my past life, I was Cleopatra, and also a novel that's coming out next year. So since that trip 5 years ago, I have written 4 books. That novel I was writing at the time, I abandoned it in the end. I did write it. I completed it, but it wasn't quite right. I think it was trying to do too many different things. And I've talked about this before on the podcast. I ended up chopping it up and using it in different ways because the ideas were valid and some of the writing was, I thought, pretty decent and strong for what I was trying to do, but it wasn't suitable for a novel. And I knew that I was avoiding writing the novel that I ended up writing about 3 or 4 years later, which is The Things We See in the Light, and that's going to be out next year as well. So I actually have 2 books coming out next year. I've had 2 books published prior to that in the last few years. So since 5 years ago, I've basically been head down writing books and also doing writer's rooms as a screenwriter and a whole bunch of other things. I now do a bit of performance here and there. I study improv theatre. I have studied acting lessons. I'm an extra sometimes. I guess what I'm trying to say is I am such an explorer when it comes to my creativity. I just love having fun and finding out what's out there. But if I hadn't had the courage to really hit the reset button, I would not have necessarily allowed myself the opportunity to write long-form memoir journalism. It was profoundly, I suppose, life-altering, really. It was a very, very difficult experience writing the first one. The second one was just as challenging, and it's not a reflection on anyone else except that you can't understand how difficult it is to compile so many voices and experiences and ideas into something that you think, well, how do I make this of value to people in a way where they haven't actually heard everything and I can't possibly encapsulate all of it into, you know, 250 pages. It's a profoundly difficult process, and I really think nonfiction is not for the faint of heart. Novel writing has its challenges, no doubt, because of the emotional fields it takes you through, but nonfiction is doubly hard because of the effort that goes into sort of the research and the transcriptions and the interviews and meeting with people who are sharing real life trauma and stories and experiences that are quite difficult. But as I said, if I hadn't had the courage to say, wait a second, I'm wasting time on stuff that I think I should do or that I feel entitled to in some way because of my experience, and yet it's not really giving back to me. It's not meeting me where I need to go. So what do I need to do? And as I said, I saw very clearly, I just needed to change my perspective. I needed to turn in a different direction. And the moment I did that, I really started to see synchronicities come into my life. I remember getting an email from someone about funding through the Council for Australian Arab Relations, and it set me on a path of thinking, I want to write about Arab women, and then eventually I did. And eventually I did get funding from them as well. So this is just a little story just to remind you that, you know, you don't think sometimes things are happening, but they are. But really, if something feels terrible and hard and difficult and like you're pushing up against something, pay attention. It's trying to tell you something. It's not meant to be like that. I don't mean your creativity is going to feel easy all the time, but it shouldn't feel so damn hard. It shouldn't feel like it doesn't want you back. And what that crossroads reset requires as well is for you to be very open and receptive to what else is possible for you. And often we know that there is something that is waiting to be found or waiting to find us. And I'm not trying to say this in a way which it's like complete woo-woo, sort of you have to be meditated like me or what. It's not that. It's there's something, there is flow and synchronicity to, I guess, diving into the unknown and just not really sort of having very, very specific ideas of how this is meant to play out. Because I never intended to write a book about Arab women. It wasn't on my radar at all. And yet I started to see so many signs and synchronicities that were taking me in that direction. And what it led to was a life-changing trip to the Arab world with my husband and getting to meet some just amazing women and hearing from them. And the book is a record of that now. So I'm really, really pleased and proud that I got to do that. So if you're feeling like things are a bit difficult or they're not moving ahead, do a creative stock take and have the courage to say, wait, I actually do have options here and I don't know which road to take. But I know if I give it some time and I really reflect on this and look at what each path offers me, it will become clearer to me which direction I need to head in and what I need to give my time and energy to, because I think that it will answer you back when you do that. I really wish you the best on that path as well. I know it's not easy, but was it Joseph Campbell who always says, follow your bliss? I know it sounds a bit hackneyed now. Everybody has these quotes everywhere, but I'm a bit of a fangirl. And I do like what he had to share about the path of life. And I guess the importance of really doing things that you love. And there's a lot of discussion around passion versus interests and things like that. I always just break it down to simply, if something is really excruciating to sit down to do and you don't have to do it, don't do it. If you have to do it, well, then it's a temporary, hopefully, stop on a much longer journey. I wish you the best. I hope that you can enjoy being at a creative crossroads if that's where you are. Be open to what it offers you. And until next time, take care.
You've been listening to Creative Confessionals, a podcast by Amal Awad. Thanks for listening.